I forgot to tell you how pissed off I am.
Really? You usually don't.
Yeah, I try to keep it to myself. I try to be a professional.
No, you usually don't forget.
Well, listen, every Saturday, okay, I go down to my favorite Italian deli and I get a meatball sandwich. And so I go this weekend, go downtown to pick up my meatball sandwich. Oh, no, excuse me. I called first to order it. No, nobody picks up. Just rings and rings and rings. And so I go down there and the place is gone. It's been there about a year and a half. Guy moved in, put everything he had into it. Didn't work for various reasons that I need to get into with the city council, but that's later. I might be running for office. We'll see. But gone. Year and a half, absolutely great little Italian deli. And I'm sitting here thinking, why didn't I start my hyperlocal site 2 years ago? If I had done that and I knew the guy was in trouble, I would have freely advertised his business week after week after week on that hyperlocal site. So I'm kicking myself and I'm pissed off.
That's interesting. There was a little pizza / sub joint in Boulder, worst location on the planet. No wonder they couldn't survive. But if I would have known they were going under, I would have done the same thing because I did start a hyperlocal site over 2 years ago.
That's right. And I found myself, I'm wondering, are you, I mean, we need to talk about this in another episode entirely, but that temptation has got to be there. But again, you got to know that they're in trouble. You got to, you know, reach out, whatever. But
and usually I have to have 50% of the business, you know, details. But
oh, right.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding, of course.
So today we're talking about getting traffic, right?
No. We're talking about growing our email list faster, which involves taking certain steps before you waste a bunch of traffic on a site that does not convert. Now, come on, Robert. You've been doing this for too long to make that mistake.
So getting traffic in and of itself is not necessarily the point. You've got to send this traffic to a website that converts, that actually works. Okay, so we've laid out a couple of ideas here on this. And this is, by the way, episode 2 of a 3-part case study that we're doing on your site, further.net. And you've got a few points that we want to cover today. The big idea, though, is yes, 3 ways to grow your curated email newsletter faster.
Well, and just let's go back a little bit to cover some ground. The reason why traffic is worthless unless they take the action you want is because the primary goal here is to build an audience asset. In this case, and most every case, that is exemplified in your email list. If you don't have permission to reach them, you don't have a whole lot, because depending on them and their memory and their willingness to just remember to come back is probably not going to work all that well. Now, even before we got to this topic, we talked about positioning, and, you know, you can almost hear it out there. Some people are like, yeah, just tell me how to get people to my site. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, because if you don't connect with the audience in the right way, in fact, if you don't connect with the right audience in the first place, you're not going to succeed long term. So you can't skip over these steps. If you have not listened to the previous episode on positioning your curation for success, please go back and revisit that. We do cover some similar ground in this episode, but it's in a different context and it's much more specific to getting people on that email list.
Yeah, we talked about this on the phone, I think on Friday, about this, you know, positioning. The idea of it is not necessarily the most sexy topic that can be covered, but really it's the foundation. It's, you know, the foundation of your home, if you will. If that's not right, or at least researched and thought through, none of this other stuff is going to matter.
Actually, I find it incredibly sexy, Robert.
Somehow I knew that was the case. But okay, moving on then into from positioning into this idea of sending traffic to a well-positioned site. And we've got 3 components of this. We're starting with content.
Right. And content is really the whole thing. Even though we are curating other people's content, if you look at the style that I'm taking with further.net, if you want to go check it out, if you haven't yet, it's very highly influenced by Dave Pell's Next Draft. I've admitted that 17 times. So no surprise there. But what Dave does and what I'm doing actually creates unique content, even though it's pieced together, assembled, if you will, Robert, just like a sales letter to a certain degree. You're taking parts, but you're still putting it in your unique voice. So we talked about that aspect of it on the last call. Both, it's got to be valuable and convenient for people, but it's got to be unique. And you do that by developing your own style, your own voice, and not being afraid or shying away from being yourself, essentially. But in this context, I'm talking about content as proof of concept before someone is going to give up that email address. Now, sometimes people are going to come to your site through an issue of the newsletter in the first place, right? You're wanting to promote social sharing. So you do want your archive pages out there on the open web so people can share it, so search engines can index it. You don't want to hide it away, even though when they come to the homepage, pretty much there's one choice of what to do. Now, on Further, you'll see an about page, you'll see a contact form, and you'll also see a very important link, and this is really what I'm talking about here, called Current. And it's amazing because I don't promote Current. Current is an archive page. It pulls the latest issue into that link. Yep. And then so whatever the newest thing is, there you go. People have it. But it's amazing. And when I have a little bit larger data set, I'm going to share the pathways of signups in a future episode. How many come through the homepage, how many come through a content page, and how many come through Current as a sample. But one way or another, you've got to have that sample. You've got to have that proof of quality, usefulness, and convenience.
And just to be clear, the navigation at the top of the homepage of further.net, there's a link called Current. You click that. That allows the reader to go to a single, the latest issue, as you describe, but just so everybody's clear on what that actually is.
Yeah, that navigation, those four things are at the top of every page. So that is an important thing where you're allowing, because with a blog, of course, everything's out there in the open. People can read for days before deciding if they want to sign up. But the difference, I think, here is that the entire site is architected. That's an awkward word. The whole site is built to drive email signups. Every time you go to a new page or a content page specifically, the first thing you see is that opt-in box. Now, you're probably not going to use that one, so it's there again at the bottom, right, when you finish the issue and you're happy with it. Yep. One way or another, you need to be able to give people a sample. Now, best case scenario in the current version of Further is you come in through a random issue that got shared. Then you click over to the homepage. You're not ready to sign up yet, but you see Current. So that, unless it's the same issue, gives you another sample. And then hopefully at that point, you're ready to pull the trigger. What I'm going to experiment with is an idea I've had about, last week we talked about maybe I'll put the about page text below the sign up, because that really tells the story in more than the minimum elevator pitch, right? But I'm thinking instead, leave about up there in the top navigation for people who want to go there, and then have one more thing on the homepage, which is subheading samples, and then just have three issues there, and then use categories to select whatever the case may be. My three favorite could do that, could be the three most popular according to the audience, might be a better idea. Anyway, you get my drift.
You can and rotate through those as you please.
Yeah, you're using the category functions in Rainmaker, and you can have them pull into the homepage that way. That's a custom design thing, but it's very simple. So that may be something that I test next. Like, what's the optimal amount of sample content? Is one going to convert best? Is more going to convert best? That's one of those things that we have yet to determine, but it's an important thing to experiment with, because you really do. Once you've got that traffic coming to the page, you want as many of those people as you can get, because frankly, if you don't sign them up, they're not coming back.
We're seeing a lot. What is it? Amanda Palmer got her book out now. I think it's The Art of the Ask. James Altucher's been talking about this a lot. But we all know this, but it's one of those kind of touchy subjects, I think, in terms of asking people to share.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's something that I think I got lazy about with Copyblogger, because once you do build an audience, sharing happens, but it's still a good idea to ask. Amanda Palmer is hugely popular, so is James, right? And they're still talking about asking. So you'll notice of all the six issues of Further so far, every time I sign off, I ask people to share. And I do it with a wink and a smile. I make a joke. Sometimes the joke's on me, but the ask is there. And people do it. And it's amazing. And I appreciate it. It's cool. But I just wonder if I didn't take those two sentences or whatever to do that, would sharing go down? I can almost guarantee you.
I bet it would, yeah. And this is one of those things, basic copywriting principle of, some people look at this like, it's obnoxious, you know, you're asking, you know, for this stuff all the time. But this is one of those things, if you've got an audience and you've got people particularly subscribed to your email list, most of your audience is already thinking, or a large portion of them are already thinking, yeah, this is really cool. Somewhere deep down in that brain, even, man, I'd like to share this, but they're just not, it's not top of mind. So all it really is, those two lines, is a reminder to what they likely already want to do. Being clear, being specific.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to point out, in this medium that we're working in, that's totally old school. I've been doing this since 98, and the email forward was the original share button. And it still happens. People forward, if you give them access to your social media buttons, you can, it's whatever form they want it to take. And I probably will start pulling sharing buttons into the actual email. They're obviously on the web pages. I also added, for the first time, a link at the top of the newsletter edition that says read on the web, because I got some very minor few reports, but Yahoo kind of kills paragraph breaks, which is horrible. So, you know, I don't want anyone to have a poor reading experience because of their email client. So I put that option right at the top. If anything is wonky, they just hit that, they go to the web, and I think the experience is even better.
All right, so let's move on to the second of the three ways to grow a curated email newsletter. And that is the thing that started it all, copy.
Yeah, so last time, with regard to positioning, we talked about copy in the context of voice and positioning and the way you want to be perceived by your audience. But we also touched a little on split testing, because I had been running one at the time. I was testing the main headline, and it wasn't a major difference in substance. In fact, it was the same substantive headline. I started with Live Your Best Life, and then I tested against How to Live Your Best Life. And like we mentioned, every copywriter on the planet would guess that How To would win. And it's amazing, because when we did the show, How To was winning. The day that we finished the show, Live came back roaring and almost tied it up. Then How To pulled way ahead again. And by the time I ended the test, and this was past a large enough sample size to be legitimate, How To won, but by a tiny amount. And I thought that was interesting. So How To certainly didn't hurt the headline, and statistically it was a little bit better. but it wasn't that much better. And I think it's because it says pretty much the same thing. So maybe how to, I'm not going to speculate that how to is less effective. It's all contextual. The general rule is you put how to in front of almost any headline and it will do better.
Yeah. You're talking about audience. You're talking about general trends as they go on the web, as people come, you know, they become used to certain things. Certainly there's a lot of headline kind of formulas that are just slapped on and applied that people get tired of. But we know even in print, there are waves back in the day. There were waves of types of headlines and types of subheads that were used. It's the same now. Nothing changes. It's all the same.
Right. So the key here, since it's all contextual and we have these very easy tools, in our case, split testing is built into Rainmaker. It's so easy. Even I can do it. But you know the answer. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about, because when you're starting a new site, generally I tell people don't spend a lot of time split testing, because if you don't have enough traffic to make it legitimate, you either have to run it for a very long time, which there's no harm in that, but you just have to be patient, because I think the example I just gave shows that if I had pulled that test at an earlier point, I might have had a wildly inaccurate view of how much better how to was. Not that it matters. Really, we're just trying to make decisions. And you'll see the homepage now is how to. What I'm thinking of next is to test a headline on that page that is radically different in tone, in voice, in substance, because it was one of the original headlines that I came up with. And that's a tip right there. During the run-up to launching, I wrote tons of different variations, which you'll hear all the time in copywriting circles. Write 50 headlines. I don't think I wrote 50 headlines on paper. I certainly ran through a lot of variations in my head before I started writing down some fairly solid contenders, right? But one is sticking around in my head because it's much brasher, much bolder. And those are the type of headlines that can make a truly huge difference, but you don't know in which direction. So yeah. That will be interesting. I'm not going to say anything more on that because it almost extends the positioning of the project, which has been kind of built in all along. That's the cool thing about going back to positioning, is it can contain multitudes. And then when you let different aspects of the broader topic that you're talking about come out and you see audience reaction, you can tell which way to go, right? We've been talking about that forever. But the key, of course, is test, don't guess. Even that design thing I talked about adding more samples, I can test that. I can test the normal homepage against the new homepage and see what happens. It's a little more complicated because there's different paths of travel. You're actually giving them a path away from the opt-in form. So that may not be the only action that you're looking for, but you can track through analytics and from email signups, you can find the pathway that people took through the site, which is really cool.
This episode of Rainmaker FM is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform. And in keeping with today's topic, I want to talk curation for just a moment, specifically what's coming to rainmakerplatform.com. There are two main aspects of any good content curation plan overall, and that's collection and distribution. And to do this well right now, you need to manage a handful of web services in different places and then bring them together in a way that makes sense for you. And one of the great curses of the web is precisely this, the management of multiple logins and passwords and apps that make it all happen. But what if you could run every aspect of your content curation strategy from one place, one login, one bill? Early this year, the Rainmaker platform will allow you to do just that. And I won't go into great detail here, but we're currently building the Rainmaker Curator, and it's a suite of tools that will allow you to find, organize, and distribute content not only to social networks, but to the property that you actually own, namely your email newsletter and your website, with just a few clicks. And yes, the RSS reader, social media scheduling, and content distribution tools are going to be built into the Rainmaker platform. So there's no more multiple accounts to manage. You can go ahead and get rid of a good handful of passwords when we launch this thing. Now, this is coming to the platform. It's not ready yet. But if you want to take a look at the rest of Rainmaker, what is there, and take it for a free test drive for 14 days, head over to rainmakerplatform.com. Quit screwing around trying to build your website and managing all those services that are scattered across the web, and get back to building your business. Rainmakerplatform.com.
And I just want to point out that the curation tools, as we mentioned a couple episodes ago, they were supposed to be in the more expensive professional plan. We decided to put them in the standard plan. So what that means is, if you decide you like Rainmaker, and of course you want the curation tools, but they're not quite ready yet, you will automatically get them as soon as they're available. No additional cost. You don't have to do anything. Install, plug in this or that. Nothing. They'll be there. We'll let you know. And then we'll really get into how to use the tools.
So the third of these foundational kind of growth strategies is something that makes me think of like a red carpet I haven't been to a club in so long, I'm old, but the stuff's all cordoned off, you can't get in, but you're talking about access. How are you approaching access to content in general on Further?
Well, I think the most obvious glaring thing right now, given modern content marketing or email marketing in general, is the lack of what we call the ethical bribe. I mean, it's almost become standard operating procedure to offer something besides the actual content that we're displaying as samples for people in order to entice them a little bit more to jump in. Now, you know, you've got a million crappy sites that offer a free ebook, and people have been trained because of the low quality follow-up to grab that ebook and run, therefore kind of defeating the purpose. So of course, a better course of action is whatever your enticement or bribe, as you will, is, it needs to be delivered over time, so that people realize that they have to stay on to get the whole enticement, number one. But number two, they get to experience that you're not delivering crap, that you're consistently delivering quality that is in line with your sample. So that's not a big revelation to anyone. That's 101 at this point. However, as you know, Robert, because you were neck deep in that project at the time, a year and a half ago, we switched from our Internet Marketing for Smart People newsletter on Copyblogger to a different concept, the concept of the content library, in which we repurposed existing content into ebooks. Nothing really new was created, but it was a repository of our cornerstone content in ebook form. But it was behind a member wall, not paid. It was free, but you did have to register as a member to access it. Now, Marketing Sherpa did a case study on us about this because the results were so remarkable. 400% increase in opt-ins. And when it comes down to building your email list faster, those are the kind of numbers that should have anyone paying attention. So,
real quick, Brian, on that, I mean, part of the success of that, and interestingly enough, we're going to be changing this around again. We'll be talking about it soon, but making big changes in how we approach kind of the general registration and email list for Copyblogger. But part of the success of that, and you talked about it before, was you've got to blow people's heads off with whatever this ethical bribe is. Not only, like you said, drip content, it's not a thing of take it and run, but because of what's available out there already, you really have to up the ante. And that's what we did with My Copyblogger. So just to put a note on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, even though when you think about it, My Copyblogger was a blessing because we'd been publishing for so many years. So even though those 16 ebooks kind of blow people's minds when they're new to Copyblogger, for us, it was wonderful, classic content repurposing.
Right.
So that was a gift that we had from being in business for a long time. What do you do if you're new? And what do you do, even if you're me, with further knowing what I know about the power of dripped course-like content, right? That is amazing. That's topically relevant. And yet also provides that concept of access. And I've been talking about this a lot because people always want to hear about anything that raises email subscription rates that much without a pop-up or anything that's really annoying. In fact, it's something that makes people feel like they're having a better experience at the site, which is crucially important. But so I'm thinking about, okay, I'm not an authority in personal development. I'm a curator. So how does a curator actually create something that's of high value content? Now, the technology is easy. Rainmaker, you set up a member wall, you set up the drip, you know, you create all the interior pages, give people a wonderful experience. You give them, like you mentioned, the red carpet, or it's really the velvet rope syndrome.
That's what I was looking for. Yes.
Yeah. They have access to something that other people don't have. That's not a problem. The tech is easy with Rainmaker, but the problem seemingly would be, what's the content? So I don't know if you remember, I may have said this more than once about the art of the audio interview in the context of podcasting, right? But what is you interviewing an expert and recording it as content? It's a form of curation, isn't it? You're not the expert. What you're doing is picking out the best ideas, you know. So, for example, I've read a bunch of books and I've kind of come up with these seven things that I think are core elements of living your best life that a lot of people either don't do or aren't doing well enough. So why not bite the bullet, because I don't know any of these people, but contact those authors. They're always looking for ways to promote their book, right? You know, I get the idea out there that people are kind of shy to ask, although people aren't shy about asking me to do free interviews. So. But I say yes as much as I can. So I think that's where you need to start, from a mentality that you are helping them and they are helping you, okay? But interview those people. I've read the book. I come up with some smart questions. I'm genuinely curious. Remember the David Siteman Garland interview where he talked about the key to a great interview is being genuinely curious in what the other person has to say. And then I do those seven interviews and there's my course. And it's curation as far as I'm concerned, because it's not me holding myself out there as an authority on whatever the case may be. No, it's them. I'm putting the spotlight on them. And yet I, going back to that impresario concept, we're going to keep coming back to that. A curator is someone who puts things together for an audience out of other parts, other talents, other expertise, other authority, in the process becoming an authority themselves.
This is interesting, and it's not new. I mean, you've been talking about it's one of the concepts of teaching sales as well, is if you're not the expert yourself, how do you build this membership learning focused business? You bring in an expert, but you know, different take here on it. But
yeah, and you're right to reflect back on teaching sales, because this is how you build a membership site too, that people pay for. And when we get into business models with this, which a lot of people are already asking about, getting ahead of themselves, you know, we'll talk again about it. But what I'm saying here is effectively all you're doing is starting a podcast, except your initial goal for this content is to increase your email conversions, which in turn, if you decide to continue with a podcast, which hint, hint, perhaps is a good idea, then you've also got a greater list to get that boost going for the show, which helps you attract new people at iTunes. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm getting into traffic now.
Yeah, we started this thing. My first question to you is, yeah, so we're going to talk about traffic, right? And so now, what about traffic?
Well, now you're in the position when you work through these things. I'm not saying you have to wait to start attracting traffic until you have, you know, this entire thing in place. Obviously, I'm proceeding with, you know, without an ethical bribe, much less anything. But that's not the point. You know, I just like to remind people that it takes time and it's good. It is good to practice the content without a huge audience because it gives you room to screw up. It gives you room to find that voice and all that. Now, look back at the beginning of Copyblogger. 3 months, pretty much crickets. And this is an interesting thing to think about. I'm literally using, at that time, no one was using the headlines I was using and all the techniques I was teaching, unlike today when everyone's doing it. So even 3 months was incredibly fast, but still, I just plugged along. I wrote, I tried to create relationships. I tried to get my content noticed. And then at the 3 month period, I found the catalyst that really got things rolling. Most people, it's going to take 6 to 9 months, and you got to have patience, and you're going to appreciate it, even if you don't want to hear that, because being able to refine your game, you know, literally, Michael Jordan didn't just show up on the court to play a game. He practiced. And so I'm viewing this period of further as I just enjoy writing the issues, getting my style down, observing things, learning all sorts of things that we're going to share in coming episodes. But I am going to talk about traffic in the context of ways in which I will get traffic that I don't have access to. It's not fair for me to say, okay, so you create an email newsletter and then you tweet it to your 173,000 followers and voila, you know, that I don't think that's a good case study. The things I want to talk about in the next episode are the things I'm going to do with my own time, which is thin, and my own money, which I don't like to lose, and see what works. But you can guarantee yourself that I'm going to be as well positioned as I can before I do that, because why waste resources until you've got your fundamental game down?
Thanks for listening to Rainmaker FM. If you like what you are hearing here, please let us know by heading over to iTunes and giving us a rating or a comment. And more importantly, go to rainmaker.fm and sign up to get free email updates of future episodes of this show, as well as instant access to a 10-part training course that will likely change the way you think about online marketing.
And that's also a demonstration of exactly what we're talking about. I created that course myself because I know a thing or two about it. But just imagine doing the same thing with interviews.
All right, Brian, thanks for taking us through this stuff yet again. We're back here next week. I'm going to see you in person. We're going to Dallas this week.
Yeah, the whole company in one place. It's going to be chaos, but fun.
I was going to say maybe we should do a live show, but I don't think that's going to happen. We'll be back next week recorded with part three of this case study of Brian's curated email newsletter project, further.net. Thanks for listening, everybody. Brian, thanks, man.
We could do Robert's drunk and interviewing people on the street.
Well, that's my new podcast.
Did I let it out?